get up and do my thing. I want to get into it, man, you know. Like, you know I'm the man, don't you? Can I count it off? 1, 2, 3, 4.
You're listening to the Church Politics Podcast with Michael Ware and Justin Gibney, where you can get in-depth political analysis from a Christian worldview. Transcend partisanship and political ideology with us as we seek true discipleship in the public square.
What's going on, Ann Camp? This is Justin Gibney, the president of the Ann Campaign, and you are listening, as you know, to another episode of the Church Politics Podcast, and it will be me again, solo this time. So hopefully you will enjoy it. Now, I know that y'all are used to, you know, when we come on and do the Church Politics Podcast, you're used to hearing a little sports commentary at the beginning of the podcast. But let me tell you something. You don't always get what you want. I need y'all to be a little bit considerate and compassionate for me right now for a few reasons. I live in Atlanta, and it is just not a good time to talk about sports in Atlanta right now. The college team that I played for and that I root for relentlessly is struggling. And most painfully, maybe, I'm just coming to grips with the fact that the Lakers won an asterisk-marked championship. And I say asterisk-marked because we all know this wasn't a real season. I mean, I guess you can still have the trophy, and if you want to feel good about it, I'm not trying to steal your joy. Actually, I am. But I'm still trying to get over that. Many people know I'm a Laker hater, and so that was really tough for me. And I'm willing to admit that I'm hating right now. But the point of what I'm saying is that there will be no sports talk on this podcast, this episode. Just deal with it. All right. We can go on to the next subject. So outside of sports, maybe we can be a little more happy about that. I had a very, very productive and busy week last week. Many of the people who have heard me speak before know that when I first started coming up with the concept in the early stages of the AND campaign, I talk about how I was really just talking to myself. And so now that God has kind of put me in a situation and others in the AND campaign in a situation to speak to others, it is a huge honor and a gift to do so, and something that I do not take lightly. And so last week I had a number of speaking engagements. I had the opportunity to speak to Apostles Church in Brooklyn, to Berry College, to the Accord Network, to the Immigration Coalition, which was great, to the Pulse Movement, to Wheaton College, to Lee University, and Redemption Church, San Francisco. Just a whole bunch of conversations about the election, about the intersection between faith and politics. And I really enjoyed it. Had answered a lot of great questions. And it just seemed like the, you know, the AND campaign's framework is really reaching people. A lot of the folks that were, you know, in the audience at these speeches and sermons were folks who listened to the Church Politics Podcast. So if that includes you, thank you so very much. A lot of the people that I talked to had already read the book, Compassion and Conviction, the AND campaign's guide to faithful civic engagement. And it always feels good to hear that the book is helping people. It's being a resource that we intended it to be, and that the AND campaign in general is being the resource that we intended to it to be for the church, for pastors who may not just be political experts. And so they don't know how to talk about all of these issues. And the book seems to be helping them do that. And that's what it's for. So shout out to all those churches, to all those colleges, to all those faith organizations and all their work. And for them embracing the message of the AND campaign, which we believe truly is a gospel-centered message. But we still understand that it, you know, you're taking a chance to bring, when you bring people in, to talk about what can be a divisive issue. And so we do our best to be challenging, to run all these ideologies and parties through biblical scrutiny. And it's just really rewarding to hear that people are seeing us as a resource. God is good. Well, let me tell you real quick about this nightmare that I had the other night. No joke. I was dreaming the other night. And this, you know, I go around the country and been doing it for years, talking about the importance of voting, talking about the importance of voter rights. And I have this nightmare the other night. I was telling my wife about it, that I woke up on November 4th and forgot to vote. After all these conversations, after telling everybody else how important it was, I forgot to vote. And in my dream, I woke up and my stomach just sunk when I realized that I didn't vote, that I had no credibility to go around telling people to vote when I missed the presidential election vote. And it was one of those dreams, and I'm sure y'all have been there before, that when you wake up for real, you are just happy that it wasn't true. just completely happy that it was not true. So don't be like me, go vote. Unfortunately, I've actually done that in real life, but long ago. I can't remember the last time. It's been a long time, I should say, since I haven't voted. I am a super voter. But I'll give you an example, and this time it wasn't on accident. And I like to give these examples to show people that, look, even the people that come on this podcast, that have been on this podcast, are not perfect. We go through the same stuff as everybody else. But we need to change some of those experiences. So when I was in college, it was the presidential election when George Bush was going against John Kerry. And let me tell you, I was all over campus being strident in my opinions about who should win and why they should win and why this was so important. I mean, just going all over. But I think I was still registered in Colorado, and I never got to sending in my absentee ballot. All that talk I did, and of course, again, this is almost, well, over 15 years ago. It's not something that happened recently, but all that talk I did, all those arguments and debates that I spent my time doing, and I didn't even take the time to send in my absentee ballot. The point of this conversation is, don't be like me in my dream. Don't be like me when I was in college. Go vote. Voting is very important. It's expected of you. We should be exercising that right, because people indeed did die for it. So go vote. Be diligent, be thoughtful, and just make the best decision you can. Again, one vote is not the whole of your public witness, but you should vote. I'm going to take a real quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk about what Proverbs may have to say about politics, about this political moment. I'll be back with you. I am back on the Church Politics Podcast. To be honest, this is going to be the last Church Politics Podcast episode before the 2020 election. I don't know. Nobody knows what the outcome is going to be. I mean, polls are not looking good for President Trump, but they weren't looking good for President Trump in 2016. And so I'm not going to make any guesses about what's going to happen. But what we do know is that regardless of the outcome, it is going to get ugly. Now, we know that one side is probably not going to want to accept the results. And, you know, who knows what happens from there? And so the question for Christians, I think, is how can we be positive actors that try to ensure that we have a healthy democracy after all of this goes down? So similar to what I did last week. And if you didn't listen to the conversation last week or to my monologue last week, go check it out. We got a lot of good feedback on what I had to say, which basically was kind of outlining what a win really meant for Christians and what it didn't mean and what we would have to do even if our side won. So go check that out if you didn't hear what was on last week. But this week, I'll be kind of talking about how Christians should respond. One way that Christians should respond, it's not going to be an exhaustive list. It's actually just one way that Christians should respond to the outcome of this election, whether their party wins or loses. This goes for both parties. Now, I've been in the book of Proverbs real heavy for the past few weeks. And it's been really, really edifying. It's been really revealing. It is a good time to be reading the book of Proverbs. So I would recommend it. Because Proverbs definitely has a word for this political moment. It definitely has something valuable to say that we need to hear in this moment. As many of you know, Proverbs talks about wisdom. You know, in Proverbs, it says that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. It talks about moral instruction. It talks about discipline in general. And it talks about disciplining the tongue, which I don't know if it's seen as a virtue today. Disciplining the tongue. You will see that in Proverbs. And Christians are really going to have to watch what comes out of our mouths after November 3rd, because it's going to be tense. People are going to be uptight and mad and everything else. We need to watch how we speak in that moment. We need to watch how we address our opponents and how we address the public square in general, because that is going to be of great consequence on November 3rd. And whenever we find that, whenever we find out what the result of the election is, how we talk to people is going to be important. Look, we can't be peacemakers if we're adding vitriol to the debate. And you know as well as I that Christians are not right now known for being the ones who are peacemakers when it comes to some of these partisan and ideological debates. Well, that needs to change. Proverbs 10:19 says, whoever restrains his lips is prudent. Proverbs 15:4 says, the soothing tongue is a tree of life, but a perverse tongue crushes the spirit. After November 3rd, we'll need to be wise with our words. Society will need Christian wisdom, not more partisan talking points. Believe me, there's going to be plenty of people that can repeat partisan talking points all day after this election. It'll be okay if Christians say, you know what, I'm going to chill for a second and let y'all handle that. Okay, we'll be all right. The Bible talks a lot about scoffers. Even in Psalm 1, the first Psalm, it says, blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of scoffers. Proverbs in particular goes in all the way in when it's talking about scoffers. It says that condemnation is ready for scoffers. So what exactly is a scoffer? According to the Bible, a scoffer is someone who mocks and derides others. They're scornful. They're prideful. They're often arrogant. They show utter contempt for others. And I think that's the marking right there, that contempt. They show utter contempt for others. And to have contempt for someone is to see them as worthless, is to see them as beneath your consideration. Is that not how we act towards our opponents in American politics? To see them as beneath our consideration, to say they're stupid or they're lazy or whatever else we come up with to dismiss what they have to say and dismiss their situation. We act like we need to know somebody's political affiliation to care about them. And then once they give us their political affiliation, even if they're suffering, it's almost like we're saying, well, you brought it on yourself. That's not the way to go about it. If you think that your political opponents are irredeemable, then you might be sitting in the seat of scoffers. You cannot be Christ-like and see anyone as worthless, because that is a denial of the Imago Dei. That's a denial of their human dignity and the idea that and the understanding that they were made in the image of God. You cannot dismiss that. But how you talk to people, how you treat people, how you act when you're hearing their concerns and their issues says a lot about how you feel about them. And in many cases, we treat our opposition, because we have those disagreements, we treat them with contempt. And it's really hard to deny that. Now, after reading these verses over and over, I realized that today, and y'all can tell me if I'm wrong on social media, through emails or whatever, I realized that today we actually celebrate scoffers. That's right. We celebrate them. I'd go so far as to say that some of us worship scoffers on social media. Think about it. The most cynical, those who are witty with their insults and the most cutting with their disparagement of others, they get a lot of retweets. They get a lot of love. We watch political commentaries on certain channels, and you know what those channels are, because our favorite scoffers are so gifted at demeaning our opponents. And what does it say that we find so much joy in seeing them demean our opponents? We joy in the humiliation of our opponents. And our elected officials and the candidates, as you saw during the primaries and everything else, are always trying to supply us with those moments. They're always play acting, looking for that viral clip. It could be a serious debate. It could be a serious hearing, and we have these supposedly serious politicians and elected officials looking for a viral clip, for a viral moment, so that they can go, so everybody can see them on social media and it'll be spread worldwide. That's the situation we're in. But Proverbs condemns the activity of the scoffer and the scornful as an abomination to the people. Don't take my word for it. That's Proverbs 24:9. But too often, we retweet scoffers. We repeat the talking points of scoffers, and we allow them to stand in as our representatives. We allow them, scoffers, these folks who the Bible is saying are wrong, we allow them to speak for us and enjoy what they have to say. And isn't that one of the biggest problems in the American political discourse? Right? Is it not? The people who claim to represent the poor, the weak, and the unborn do a disservice to those very groups because their words are scornful, because their words are contemptuous, or because their words are unnecessarily extreme. Now, I hope that all of us will try to advocate in some way after the 2020 election. And that's what I was talking about last week, that we all need to find a way to advocate, even if our party wins. But let's face it. Much of American advocacy is counterproductive. It only speaks to the people who already agree with whatever the issue is. Otherwise, it's just about insults and one-upsmanship, not really having cogent solutions, not really getting people to agree with you. But here's the problem. When people think of an issue, many times what they're seeing in their heads, the vision that comes up to them, is the people advocating for that issue, because those are the people who are shown on television and those are the people who speak on behalf of those issues on different shows. They're actually seeing those advocates. They're not seeing in their heads, when the issue comes up, the people who are suffering because of the issue. And if the advocate is the person they see, and if the advocates are abusive and disrespectful in their language and in their actions, that's reflected in how people react to certain issues. Now, we can debate on whether that's fair or unfair, but that's the reality of it. If you're the representative of a certain group, or you're saying you're the representative of a certain group, people see you. They don't necessarily see those people, especially if they don't encounter them on a day-to-day basis. And you can be doing those people a disservice by how you talk, by how you act. I mean, this is visible in history. It's visible all over. And so when we come back, I'll give you a few examples of how really in the past and really even an example today of how advocates and representatives of certain groups or certain issues have done those issues and those people really a disservice. I'll be right back. Well, I'm back on the Church Politics Podcast again. Thank you for tuning in. And right now I'm talking about Proverbs and talking about what Proverbs has to say about scoffers. Scoffers are people who mock others, who demean others, and who speak with contempt for their political opponents or their opponents in general. And I'm talking about how many times we follow behind scoffers. We allow scoffers to be our representatives. We promote the words of scoffers. Now, I was saying that this can be seen throughout history, how when somebody's an activist or an advocate of a certain group or a certain issue, and they choose their words poorly, or they want to be extreme, or they want to be demeaning to others, how they're a disservice to the actual issue or the people that they say they're representing. So let's look at one historical example. We can look at the language used by the moral majority, those Christians who fought for certain cultural issues. Can you recall how some of them spoke about LGBTQ people and others while supposedly advocating for family values and morality. Advocating for morality with mean and contemptuous words. That's discipling backwards. And I think we're even seeing today on many issues, whether it be the LGBTQ issue, whether it be the sanctity of life, or some of the other issues that those folks were talking about, that it has still left a bad taste in many people's mouths because the advocacy and the words that were chosen and the posture and the tone of what was being said seem to be, in many cases, coming from the mouths of scoffers. Now, that is not to condemn or come at everybody who was part of those movements. But in general, there's a reason why a lot of people, even some Christians who have conservative values, can never really connect with the moral majority, because it was how they talked about certain issues. It was the posture and it was the tone that was a disservice to the issues and to the people that they claim to be representing. Or we can look at another example. We can look at the hyperbolic language of some people who claim to be criminal justice advocates. Some of these people, I don't know who chose these words exactly, but some of these people chose the extreme phrase defund the police. I think that's a good example of just kind of being extreme with your words. So we're talking about defunding the police while advocating, number one, for people who didn't even want the police to be defunded. I mean, the polls show that a lot of people in the African-American community who lived in those spaces didn't even want that. But yet these are what the advocates who say they're representing them are calling for. They got upset when people thought defund the police actually meant defund the police. And in some cases it did. It was hard to say who was in control of what it actually means. We talked about that's kind of the problem with not having clear leadership. But I don't see how you could get mad at someone who thought defund the police meant defund the police. But I think the biggest brain buster in this whole thing is that some folks tried to support defunding the police by destroying inner city communities. So basically, I'm going to tear down your community. I'm going to create complete chaos in order to convince you to defund the police. No one was persuaded. Not a soul was persuaded. The only people who went along with that were people who were indoctrinated to that point of view from the beginning and were going to go along with it either way. No one else was persuaded at all. The worst part, maybe, though, was that the sensible ideas within the movement, the idea that police officers probably weren't the best ones to go to every issue, you know, to be the first ones on the scene with every issue, that maybe we should send social workers or other people so that the police aren't the ones in the situation and the situation doesn't get escalated. Great idea. But guess what? That sensible idea didn't even really get a full hearing. And part of the problem that we see is that in our discourse, the most dramatic, the most mean-spirited, and the most extreme voices or words and phrases or just language are seen as the most passionate. They're seen as coming from the most committed people. Almost to say is that you don't use that kind of language, you don't care. It almost seems as if people are saying that discipline is a vice, that measured words are a sign of complacency. Well, that's not what it says in Proverbs. But in so many words, I've actually had people come up to me who were friends or people who heard about the AND campaign and basically say that AND campaign wasn't enough because we refuse to use all the same language and symbols as secular activists. And it's really unfortunate. And the reason that we don't use that language and we don't use that word is because we don't think it's effective. We don't think it's a good representation of the wisdom of God and of the grace of God. Now, I want you to keep in mind that while we're having this conversation, nobody is telling you that you have to be passive. Nobody is talking about respectability. Nobody is talking about not actually addressing the issues. We're talking about the way that you do it. We're not saying that you can't be we're against civil disobedience or we're against being loud at moments where it's called to be loud. But how do you address other people? Proverbs 16, verses 21 and verses 23, it says this. The wise heart is called discerning, and sweetness of speech increases persuasiveness. The heart of the wise makes his speech judicious and adds persuasiveness to his lips. When our words are gracious and our words are judicious, they're more persuasive. No one is persuaded by insults. That's why a lot of this incivility, a lot of this crazy talk that we're going to hear from a lot of people on November 3rd, hopefully it's not you, is not going to move the needle. It's certainly not going to heal anything. The idea that being so abrasive, so hostile in all your conversations, the idea that actually gets you somewhere in a republic like we have just doesn't make any sense. But see, the problem is, in our contempt, we've completely given up on each other. We have given up on the other side of the conversation. Like, it's not even worth talking to them. It's over. And that's what's most concerning about the moment. But we need to understand that Christians can't just give up on people. See, the problem is we don't even try to persuade anybody anymore. Again, because we've given up. When we talk to our opposition, we're really just talking to them to land shots, to score points, and to get something off our chest. I got something I got to say, and I need you to hear it. Well, that's cute, but is that getting us anywhere? That's cute, but is that actually helping the people that you say that you're trying to help? Is that helping us get criminal justice reform? Is that helping us get police reform? Is that helping the unborn? Is that helping people see why religious liberty is important? Just getting something off your chest does none of that. See, we often just want to get celebrated by our tribe. We want to meet with the other side. We want to, you know, go off on them and then go tell all our friends or hope they see it on social media or whatever, and we can get patted on the back. But that's not the solutions that you say that you want for the people that you say that you're advocating for. We got to decide, what we want to do. What's the most important? What's our priority? Because a lot of that stuff is very simply just prideful. Look, the choice is not between candy coating the truth. We do not support that. Or being as acerbic as possible. Tell the truth, and tell the truth with moral imagination. Tell the truth with tenacity, but also with love and grace. I can't tell you how many times I heard people eisegete about how Jesus turned over tables. And that happened. Yes, Jesus did turn over the tables. The great high priest did go into the temple and overturn tables. And there's more to that than you might think. But guess what, Christian? That doesn't justify you following behind and repeating scoffers. That doesn't justify you having a vengeful or scornful public witness. Please do not use Jesus because you don't want to have any discipline. Please do not use Jesus's example because you just want to go off on the other side anyway. Let's not do that. That's not what that's for. And we got to do better. Look, after next Thursday, Americans will need biblical wisdom to get us through this moment. Let's watch our words so we can provide that biblical wisdom and so that we can be peacemakers. So I'm going to ask that people watch their words, that they not be scoffers, that they not retweet scoffers, that they not repeat scoffers, that they not follow behind scoffers. And then I also say we should read Proverbs maybe for this next week. Let's just read through Proverbs. That'll give you it'll be more edifying than what I'm saying today. I think it's very important that we do that. But we're going to end it in a second. I got a few things that I'm going to propose to you, and then we'll get out of here. But I will be right back. 1 second. right, folks, I hope you have enjoyed this episode so far. Again, it's the last episode before the 2020 election, and just so much has gone into this election in preparation and for the AND campaign trying to get Christians prepared and equipped to go about this in a faithful way. It's been a long year in that regard and many other regards. As you many of you know, we had our 2020 statement where we spent months and months kind of poring over that statement. And a lot of people felt like that statement spoke for them. Some people didn't like it so much, but we are proud of that statement. And we think we really applied in a faithful way our framework to what was going on at the moment. And so it's been a lot that has gone into this. So for this to be coming up in less than a week, you know, in a way you're happy that it's about to be over, but in a way it's like, man, it's been a lot coming up to this. So make the best choice that you can. If you haven't already voted, please vote. Don't be like me in college where I missed that opportunity, even though I was running my mouth. Thank God I have grown since then. So make the best decision you can. It is not the whole of your public witness, and just stay prayerful. But I'd like to also ask people to read an article that I found to be a really good article on another issue. And the article was by Eve Tushnet, and it was in the Washington Post. Now, the article was entitled, "What Does Pope Francis Believe About Same-Sex Love?" And regardless of what you think about the Pope, this is not about that. This particular article by Tushnet was thoughtful and gracious. I mean, I was moved by reading this article. You don't have to agree with the whole thing. That's not the point. We don't just recommend stuff that you will agree with everything that's said in it. But it is a thoughtful way to think about maintaining the historic Christian sexual ethic, which is that sex is for marriage between one man and one woman. But why, you know, but how can we treat our same sex attracted neighbors and brothers and sisters who are striving for family? And what does that mean? And so I would suggest that you read that article. One thing that it clarifies is that the Pope did not endorse same sex marriage, as was reported, seemed to be reported. It's unfortunate, but I don't think that the media did a good job of representing what he was actually saying. I think they allowed some different agendas to get in there. But either way, I think that article is something that we should wrestle with. I think it's a good example of thinking about this particular issue with compassion and conviction. And we know that as Christians, we have not always done that. Well, that's another episode. I appreciate y'all joining us. As usual, AND Camp, there's a cross that neither political conservatism nor progressivism is fit to bear. There's a civic hearing in need of faithful witnesses who love social justice and won't surrender the truth to be loved by the world. Politic with the boldness and compassion of Jesus Christ, AND Camp. Until next time. This is the groove. Tell me, can you handle it? I'm schooled in the ways of runaway slaves. I'm brave, I'm unchained, I'm Frederick Douglass with a fame.